Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It has been, I think, a real triumph for Major League Baseball. I mean, rightfully so. Adam Silver and the NBA got credit for that bubble, and I think Major League Baseball should get tons of credit for what they've put together, what they've accomplished, and what a wonderful postseason it's been. And one of the guys covering that postseason, for my money, one of the absolute best reporters in Major League Baseball, see him on MLB Network, Fox Sports, I mean, everywhere. John Morosi joins me now on the show from the road. Mr. Morosi, I hope you're doing well in this 2020. Thanks for making time, buddy.
Bill, thanks so much for having me on the show this morning. Greetings from beautiful Arlington, Texas. I'm going through the last 24 to 48 hours of the isolation that comes before you're able to enter the secure zone, which means that eventually World Series time, I'll be doing interviews and actual on-field reporting for MLB Network. So I'm very excited about that, to work for MLB tonight during that time. But it's been a unique month. I was up in the higher levels of the press box, safely distanced away from the players during the course of the division series, but very eager indeed to get back on the field.
Yeah, John, how have you found, just for yourself, both the sport itself, the quality of play, and your job, with everything being as different this year as it has been?
Well, it's a great question, because it certainly has been a unique time. I recall we had a day earlier this summer when you and I spoke. I think I was actually driving home from Cincinnati. That was a very typical experience for me. I did a lot of road trips in the Midwest to work our MLB Network showcase games and YouTube broadcasts. So I drove a lot. Fortunately, living in the Midwest, I was able to get to Detroit, Cincinnati, St. Louis even. I drove over to St. Louis, Chicago, Milwaukee, so a lot of driving. And then now, of course, the last couple of weeks, spent more time on airplanes. And honestly, I want to credit the players, the teams. Certainly all the interviews have been on Zoom for me so far this year. And I would say I miss those organic conversations. As you know, with baseball, so much of what we do is those organic talks that you have on the field or in the clubhouse, and the access in baseball has always been so great. So that's been a challenge, and honestly, you know how much I love the international aspect of the game, just the conversations in Spanish with players who really have helped me learn so much about culture around the world and the Spanish language. Like, those are my best professors, and I've been missing that interaction this year. But I think everybody that's been involved in the sport, all the testing, all the protocols, they've done a great job. And obviously we've gone now several weeks without a positive test among the players, which I think is a tremendous achievement. And now, Bill, we all just have to hope that continues here for the balance of the postseason. And it's been so far so good in the postseason. But as we know, this is no time for complacency or spiking the ball on the 5-yard line. We've got to see this through to the end.
The very talented John Morosi here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm Bill Ryder. John, just great. The ALCS in its own way has been really interesting and dramatic, and the NLCS, same thing. And what a performance by that Dodgers offense last night. Can you recall a time in a postseason game of that importance, a team getting off to that kind of an offensive start?
Well, it was historic. Most runs scored in a single inning in LCS history. It was a remarkable set of circumstances. And the Dodgers at-bats, Bill, they had gotten better toward the end of game two. And I think that that set a tone for them. And even then, the instant replay on the first play of the game, which was the correct call. It's why replay is there to correct what was a really tough call to make in real time. And so hard to fault anybody for that. But I really think that if Mookie Betts is out there, it may change the momentum of that inning. And I think Kyle Wright just could not locate the ball after that, and then Grant Dayton struggled after him. And so really two struggling pitchers from Atlanta's side told the whole story of that game. And now it's a really competitive series, of course, at 2-1. The Dodgers with Clayton Kershaw on the mound tonight in game four, certainly a lot of eyes on Clayton Kershaw. And I think, Bill, it's important for us to note, Clayton Kershaw, even though he gets criticized at times for his October performances, the reality is he has won 11 postseason games in his career. That is the third most of any pitcher in the current century, after only Justin Verlander and Andy Pettit. So Kershaw's had a lot of great moments too. I think he gets unfairly criticized a little bit, and tonight on a grand stage is a pretty compelling chance for him to do it all just about 25 miles away from where he went to high school there in Dallas, Texas.
John Morosi here on the show. So you've got that Clayton Kershaw and that historic number of wins. You do have a Clayton Kershaw who, before John this postseason, his previous four outings had gone, I think it's 17 innings pitch in the postseason, had given up 14 earned runs. He's been remarkable this year. He's been great in his two postseason appearances. What do you expect from him tonight? What do you think the, because I know that Dodgers fans are worried that Clayton Kershaw, you know, is not going to live up to expectations, even though they're very defensive of and jealous of his reputation. And I know Braves fans are very worried they're just going to be, they're going to suffer under another Atlanta sports meltdown. What is the, you think, reasonable expectation for what Kershaw does tonight?
Well, that's a great question because, of course, of the back spasms that he was experiencing. That was right. The reason why he did not pitch game two. So I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on him early on by the Dodgers. I think fortunately for them, they did not have to go to their real A bullpen options during the course of game three. So they could theoretically have people like Joe Kelly, Blake Treinen, Brusdar Graterol, Victor Gonzalez, who's had such a great season for them. So that they should have a pretty good complement of relievers behind him. But I think it's going to be of paramount importance for Kershaw to get them at least into the fifth inning. Because remember, no off days in this series, Bill. And the Dodgers still have to figure out who's going to start game five for them. And it likely is going to be Dustin May. And then game six is Walker Buehler, who, of course, has had his own blister issues. And game seven would then theoretically be a Tony Gonsolin, who had some good moments in game two, but ultimately, of course, took the loss that day. So this is a really tightly contested back-and-forth series. And I think we're already seeing that a lot of the typical rituals of how you use your playoff pitching, simply just not having the off days in this round, change everything. And it's really remarkable, Bill, just to see how it's all unfolding. And the Dodgers entered this with, I think, a pretty distinct pitching advantage in terms of rotation depth. But the way that it's played out, I'm not sure that necessarily it's actually been that way in real life here because of the way Dustin May has been used and the fact that they had to bump Kershaw back a couple days. This is a very evenly matched series that I fully now expect to go seven games.
We're talking to John Morosi here on the show. The Dodgers have obviously the two losses and the impressive but in the end ineffective comeback in game two and the very handy win yesterday. They haven't had to worry about their closer situation. Do you have any sense of the confidence level the Dodgers have in Kenley Jansen, John, or your confidence level in Kenley Jansen when and if those situations arise?
Well, I think with Kenley, he is, I would say, Bill, no longer their clear closer. I think that to me has become apparent just by the way they've used him. Of course, he pitched yesterday in a lopsided game, and that was probably just to get him an inning, to get him comfortable again, but by no means do I think that was a trial run for him to close a one-run game tonight. I think if the Dodgers are leading by one run in the ninth inning tonight, their first option is probably Treinen. Their second option is likely Graterol. Maybe Joe Kelly is their third option, and Jansen is probably their fourth. It's probably to that point right now. And Dave Roberts has done a tremendous job to keep Kenley engaged and to keep the overall tenor of the conversation around him supportive and upbeat. But the reality is, Bill, that the way they've used him shows to me that they don't trust him in a one-run game in the ninth inning. That's just simply not his role anymore. And I think that we'll see how things unfold. I'd be surprised if he has enough time to work his way back into that role. The stuff hasn't really been all that overpowering. And the Dodgers are moving to a time where they don't really have that clear, definitive ninth-inning guy. And a lot of teams, Bill, have that new mentality where they don't have that necessarily locked down ninth-inning pitcher, although I think we're also seeing in certain cases the other three teams that are still around basically do. Melanson is that for the Braves, Castillo is that for the Rays, and Presley has been that for the Astros. So the Dodgers, with arguably the deepest pitching staff, still don't have that clear closer, which makes this just such a fascinating postseason to watch.
It's been so much fun. John Morosi here on CBS Sports Radio's Writer Than You. I'm Bill Ryder. John, I got to get to the other series, but I have one more Dodgers question. I want to geek out because I love and appreciate your insight, and I know listeners do too. There has been a lot of talk on this show, in LA sports media, just in general, about whether or not Andrew Friedman and the Dodgers' approach and reliance on and how much they value on-base percentage has trouble translating to driving in runs in the postseason. Is that a fair criticism that guys that get on base a lot because they draw a lot of walks can have trouble driving in runs in a different situation against a higher class of pitching under pressure in the playoffs?
Well, that's a great question. And the Dodgers, I still think their lineup depth might be the overall best of any team that's left in the playoffs, 1 through 9, and their ability to mix and match. Dave Roberts does a great job of that as well, just his ability to know his personnel and move guys in and out of the lineup. But I think that, you know, last night certainly was a pretty good demonstration to the positive side that the Dodgers have still players that certainly can hit for power and are able to hit mistakes, which certainly early on yesterday there was a lot of mistakes made by Kyle Wright. I think that you do make a very good point that in many ways the teams that have the greatest success in the postseason are those that can string a rally together and that don't strike out. I cite often a city that I know means a lot to both of us, Kansas City, and the Royals 5 years ago. That team, that's a really unique team, the way that they constructed their offense, and they put the ball in play a lot, and they won the World Series. They did not strike out. And the Dodgers, for all their virtues as an offensive club, they have some strikeout in that lineup. And I think eventually they're going to have to find some ways to be a little more selective. That was certainly the case last night. They're going to constantly battle that. It's a team that when you throw them, when you get ahead on them and then you throw them chase breaking balls, Bellinger will go outside of the zone often. Peterson does the same thing. That's why Mookie Betts and Seager, when he's at his best, are such a nice antidote to that free-swinging mentality, because they really have put together some great at-bats, and Mookie in particular. So, and certainly Seager over the course of the season as well. So there's a lot to like about this team. I think it's a better lineup now, Bill, than it was a year ago. But you're right in that maybe some of the more swing-for-the-fences mentalities do not work as well in October as they might in August.
Follow John Morosi on Twitter, at John Morosi, and watch his coverage from the bubble at the World Series for MLB Network. John, obviously the Astros have some baggage, some drama that they have carried with them into what's been a really compelling ALCS, even if it's at 3-1 right now. Carlos Correa hasn't been shy over the course of his postseason at talking about it. I haven't been shy at being critical of Carlos Correa and the Astros. Can you just tell us, do you have a sense of how much, for better or worse, and I'd love your perspective on it, what the Astros had done and the reaction from people around baseball has impacted them in this playoff and in this series in particular, if at all?
Well, it's a really interesting question, Bill, because I think that within the game, there is still a pretty healthy amount of antipathy toward them for the sign-stealing scandal, and there are probably a lot of neutrals, to use the term, in baseball who are pulling for the Rays here because of the way the Astros are viewed. The Astros seem to know that, and they seem to embrace that. The us against the world mentality often is overused in sports, but in this case, I think it's actually apt. That's the one card they've got right now, Bill, and is that they believe they are united against everyone else. Dusty Baker, great manager. I think he's done a very good job of just building a continuity and a collective purpose among that group along those lines. So I think they certainly sense around them, how much negativity there is. Of course, it's different because we don't have fans in the ballpark to remind them of that, which is unique, and who knows how it's going to be next year. Although the interesting thing to me, Bill, is the longer we get away from it, and I realize Correa is still there and Altuve is going to be there and some of the key guys from that club, Bregman, are going to still be around the Astros. But let's remember, Springer, free agent after the season is over. Reddick as well. I think only 7 or 8 players from that team are even still active on the Astros. And by the way, the guy who threw the last pitch of the 2017 World Series is pitching for the Rays now, Charlie Morton. So it's a different thing. I think it will change as time goes on, as the roster itself evolves, different manager, different GM, different players in many cases. But there is still that negativity. It's going to take a while for that to wear away. But I also think that Dusty Baker has been the right leader for this team, and I admire the way that he has handled things. And I'm also a believer in second chances. So I think it's important that we watch that team carefully and sort of admire the way that they were able to win a fourth game against the Rays just there last night.
John Morosi, I could talk to you for 5 hours, but I won't do that to you because even though you're great, I know you have things to do. So last one for you. This has been tremendous. Really appreciate the time and the insight. The Rays are a win away, obviously, from a World Series appearance, and they have one of the smallest payrolls in baseball, in a sport where payroll often, not always, but very often correlates to success and playoff success. How did they do this? How did they get here?
Creativity, outstanding front office, great manager. Kevin Cash is a really great, underrated manager. He certainly learned a lot from Terry Francona, and I look at him as being a very similar leader to Terry in terms of just the way he treats people and the way that he puts people at ease. They've got a great culture. They have a lot of fun. They keep their clubhouse light. That's one thing that certainly hasn't changed since the Joe Maddon days. It's a team that knows who they are, that has the freedom to be themselves, and that doesn't really seem to stress too much. And baseball is a sport that, as we know, it's one of the handful of sports that exist in the world that you can't play better by trying harder because of the mental nature of it. And I think that Kevin does a great job of keeping his players in the right headspace. Their front office, you look around, and the number of teams that are led by former Rays executives, the Astros, of course, James Click is there, Andrew Friedman with the Dodgers, Chaim Bloom with the Boston Red Sox. It's a team, and Eric Neander, of course, the current GM of the Rays, does a tremendous job. So they I think, have found a lot of still, even at a time, Bill, where a lot of people supposedly closed the gap on inefficiencies in the game, they get Randy Arozarena from the Cardinals in a, you know, for a significant pitching prospect, but still, they got somebody that now looks like an MVP player. I mean, he's been incredible. So they really still, even in this day when all the information is supposedly out there and everybody's got analytics, they still find advantages. They still know where to look, and they work very hard. Great organization that's drafted well, traded well. Just I can't say enough great things about the way they run their club, and they've really put together a very exciting defensive team, Bill, as much as they are offensive. They catch the ball, and I would buy a ticket when we can do that again and watch them play defense because they really have a lot of fun in the field.
John Morosi is at the bubble. He will be covering the World Series. You can always see him on MLB Network on Fox Sports. Follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. John, you're a talented dude. You're a good man. Appreciate you, buddy. Thank you so much for making the time.
Bill, right back at you, my friend. Love our conversations. We go back a long way, Bill. Lots of years, and I always enjoy our conversations on air, off air, and all the best to you and your family as always.